Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, I'm still sad. No big parade. And again, that number, that 666 number, keeps popping up. Evidently, the 12 million we were told originally, 92 million, what they're proposing now, 666% increase. And I keep coming back to that. You know, Trump, 666, Antichrist, Damien Thorne, Omen, or maybe it's just, you know, that Catholic upbringing. I don't know. just crazy. Anyway, here to talk a little bit about the no parade, or maybe pushed off parade, or whatever's going to happen, and the rest of the stories today. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story, to come talk with us. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I am good. Sads. No parade.
You know, I'm surprised. I thought for sure that they were going to spend a fortune on something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the $12 million, I'm sure they could justify the $92 million price tag of what it's been lastly. Especially when you've got veterans who are going without health care or shelter or food or, you know, things that they need on the battlefield. You know, especially, you know, and I do find it ironic that they kind of pulled it back after he signed the NDAA.
Yeah, the defense authorization. I mean, when I calculated out how much this was probably going to cost, I was also looking at how much it would be to repave Pennsylvania Avenue in case they decided to send tanks down it, because it would completely destroy the roads. And there are all kinds of things that you could spend money on. You know, like already we're running a really, really high deficit from these tax cuts to major corporations. And then they want to do another tax cut thing before the election. And, you know, I'm all for spending as long as it's actually helping people who need it. And none of this is helping. So this just seems like a really, really stupid idea.
Well, I said it was a dumb idea right from the very beginning. And look, I don't need to feed the marmalade Mussolini's ego. I mean, he's already got enough of that as is. This was just a bad idea top to bottom. But what it was meant to do is to divide us on the military issue. Because, you know, the left hates the military. You know, because we want to make sure that when we send them into battle, that they have what they need, and that when they come home, that they're taken care of. Heaven forbid that we hate our troops.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing, though, is they'd rather spend money on a big show of we love the troops, but they wouldn't want to spend that money to actually do things that would help the troops. How is that supporting the military? That makes no sense.
Well, they did take a picture with them.
Oh, bless his heart.
And we got one of those in. So I'm waiting for all the Trump tweets to come out about, you know, about how the Pentagon's screwing him over. Just kinda, and how the Pentagon hates the troops.
Oh, whatever. I mean, I don't know how you can stand there and say to a general that you hate the troops. Like, it just, that doesn't even look good. Yeah. You know, you don't want to have that on your conscience.
Well, did you see the thing this week when he was, you know, speaking in front of the 10th Mountain Division, whatever the heck that was about, you know, you just got a huge raise and you don't really want it, do you? Show your hands, and, you know, making them feel guilty because for the last 9 years they haven't gotten a raise. And finally now they're going to get, like, I think, a 2.6% raise, which, whoopee. I mean, that's not life-changing money.
No, it's not. And you still have a number of troops who are on food stamps or welfare. You've got veterans who are homeless. It's just like, dude, 2% ain't going to do nothing.
Yeah, that's crazy. Let's get to the really important stuff. The most important issue of the day. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
Omarosa. You know, the most important issue. We can't do anything without wondering, are there N-word tapes out there? And look, they're tapes, I'm sure, I'm certain of. But this is the most important issue of the day. It just is.
You know, this whole thing, when all of this was happening, it made me think of something my mom always says. And, you know, we're Southern, so it's everything she says sort of sounds very Southern. And she's like, you know, if you want to catch a squirrel, you just climb right up a tree and act like a nut. I feel like that really encapsulates who Omarosa is. And
I think, you know, both of them, two nuts, you know, from the same tree.
Yeah, absolutely. They belong in some sort of, you know, pecan pie.
It's just crazy, though. And now I hear reports that evidently John Kelly wants Trump to have her arrested, and you know, all just all this insanity around this. And I'm going, and in fact, you know, the GOP put out a tape, I guess, that you know, has all these montage of her saying nice things, and Trump retweets it. And I'm going, you have nothing better to do?
You know, I don't think that they do have anything better to do. And the thing about John Kelly was interesting to me. I think that that only happened because he realizes how badly he broke protocol by taking her into the Situation Room to fire her. The accusations that he locked her in there for 2 hours and wouldn't let her out. And that makes sense. Like, you have to add a code to get in and to get out. So it seems like that's not a great idea. And I mean, I think he's trying to save face. I think he's, you know, trying to say we should do something to her because, you know, she did this. But really, it's just that he's been completely humiliated. And my guess is he's probably not going to be the only person who's completely humiliated by the time this is over.
No, and one of the things that's interesting is, you know, from reports that I've read, you know, she's one of these people who, you know, everyone knew she was recording everything. She's kind of like, you know, the Michael Cohen of the White House now. You got to wonder how many tapes she's got.
Yeah, and they made it sound like she's been recording for years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this really could be a huge thing. I mean, I know that she turned some tapes over to Mueller. I don't know that that's necessarily going to get anything. I don't think Omarosa was involved in the Trump Tower meeting or, you know, anything like that.
Although she does claim that Trump knew about it.
Yeah. And if she has a tape of him talking about knowing about it, that's going to be fun.
That could be trouble.
That's going to be amazing.
But do you think that she can bring him down? I mean, you know, like, if let's say there is, you know, a tape out there of him using the N-word every other word in a sentence, does that hurt him at all? Or is it like I think it just, with his base, makes him even stronger because, see, we should be able to say that word.
Yeah, and you know what? I kind of feel like racists should be able to say that word, because if they say it, then we know that they're racist. Like, if they're saying it, then it's in your face and you can be like, okay, I know never to invite you to anything, never to have anything to do with you, never to hire you. And it's like a big old racist flag where we can all just be like, let's ignore these people because clearly they're racist. But, you know, that's the only benefit to it is now everybody's taking their hoods off, for lack of a better phrase.
And only, what 24 of them showed up in D.C. on Sunday, which cost, I guess, the city, what, $2.6 million?
Well, they said that they allocated $2.6 million for it. I think what it actually cost was a lot less.
Oh, okay,
I think
good.
It was still a lot, but I think what I heard was a little bit over $80,000. And most of that was just having police presence there, making sure that every policeman who is on the force, even if they're off work that day, was on hand because they thought something terrible was going to happen, and then nobody showed up.
Yeah, hold on a second, because, you know, I just read the report yesterday, $2.6 million. How did it go from $2.6 million spent on this down to $80,000? How did that happen? How did I miss that?
Well, what I read is that they had allocated it, you know, attempting to say, all right, if worst case scenario, here's the money that we have that we can spend on, you know, if there's a massive riot, if there's tons of trash, if there are cars and windows broken and everything bad that could possibly happen, this is how much it's going to cost. When nobody showed up except for, you know, a bunch of liberals and Black Lives Matter folks, you know, it was peaceful. Everything was pretty chill. The Antifa people and the anarchists were a little bit rowdy, but I mean, I saw what happened during the Trump inauguration. So that was nothing. Chucking bottles at people, plastic bottles, like, please, come on.
Yeah.
I've seen worse.
No, I was, you know, I was expecting, you know, Unite the Right Too to be, you know, the next Klan rally, you know, to harken back to 1925 when they had the big march down the street, and all it was, you know, 25 nitwits who had the day off from work or didn't have jobs.
And it's interesting because I kind of thought that that might happen. I thought that it just seemed like it was going to be a bad deal in general, because I know what this town is like. You know, I mean, this is a very liberal town, and most of the people here that are Democrats or progressives, even centrists, these are political people. These are people who show up to stuff. They always vote. They give money. Like, by golly, they're going to show up to protest some Nazis. And
as sure you should.
Enough, yeah. I mean, the whole town was together. It was really like, you know, the DC block party. It was kind of great.
So is it, you know, one of the things I said back on Inauguration Day is I do believe Trump will unite the country. Eventually they will unite it against him. But, you know, somehow at the end of all this, we may come back together after we find out just how horrible he is. And I look at something like this and I go, you know what? You did get a whole bunch of people to come together.
Yeah. And you're seeing that now with women in suburbia who voted for Trump because they didn't like Hillary Clinton. Now they're pulling away from Trump. You're getting independents who are pulling away from Trump. All of these, you know, young people who didn't show up at the polls this time are coming out in droves, and we're seeing huge turnouts. Did you see what happened in Minnesota with how many people showed up there to vote? That's insane. So you look at the enthusiasm gap, you look at, you know, what's been going on with these primaries. I feel like Americans are coming together against the racist asses.
I hope so. But, you know, I look at a place like Kansas, where you got Kris Kobach, who evidently is now going to be the Republican nominee to run for governor in November. And we've talked about this, and it could go one of two ways. Either the Democrat wins and Kansas maybe moves somewhere back towards sanity, or it becomes a fun 4 years at Canada in Kansas as he takes them further down into the rabbit hole, or he just steals the election.
You know, that's the only thing that I think could swing it, is if he stole the election, that's the only way he wins. I mean, I've seen this movie before in 2002 and 2006. This is exactly what happened to Kathleen Sebelius. This is how she rose to power, by being a completely middle of the road. You know, she didn't stir the pot. She was very chill and rational and cared about education and the economy, and voila. It turns out Kansas people like that over a crazy racist who is more interested in ideological battles than fixing the Kansas economy.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, because, you know, some of the reporting that's come out of the, especially in the most recent primaries, is that the and especially out of Minnesota, is that, you know, any rational establishment type Republicans are being ousted from the party, and you'd better be a fringe like Kobach or like some of these others who are basically just little baby Trumps.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why those people winning really disenfranchise the middle of the road Republicans. And those middle of the road Republicans are not going to vote for Kris Kobach. There is no way.
I hope.
The Chamber of Commerce types, like, they don't want that because it's bad for business. You know, nobody wants to move their business to a state that doesn't have a stable economy, doesn't have a good education infrastructure. So things like that, all of these middle of the road Chamber of Commerce type Republicans, they're not going to vote for that. There's no way.
From your lips, I'm hoping. although, you know, to be honest, as I've said, you know, I think it would be entertaining to see Kobach in that spot and to watch Kansas, you know, further down the hole.
You know, I kind of, when you said that the other day, I thought, I don't know if I agree with that, but the more I thought about it, you're kind of right. There's no way to lose here, because either you take him out, his career will never die. He's like the cockroach of politics. But even if he did win, I mean, I think he destroys the state of Kansas, which is horrible for the people of Kansas, but, you know.
But, you know, look, you know, elections have consequences. This is what we keep hearing.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. But here's the thing that's kind of, I'd always said the billionaires have, you know, basically taken over our elections. This election cycle, Democrats are outraising Republicans in huge fashions. And in fact, you know, I just got an email from Devin Nunes, the Kremlin gremlin from out in California, who, you know, he's saying that, you know, the Democrats are raising money at like 6-1 against him. And, you know, we need money. Please send your dollar to me. And I just thought it was, you know, interesting, because I haven't seen a lot of Republicans saying we're being badly outraised by the Democrats.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either. And I think my guess is that that's probably he's fibbing a little bit.
Oh, no. You think?
Yeah, I mean, the Republican Party has been outraising the Democrats, not by a lot, but, you know, by a little bit. What has been interesting, though, is now looking at things like Schiller, Trump's old bodyguard, knowing the $15,000 a month that he's scoring so that he can do security for the 2020 convention for the Republicans.
Yep.
That's 2 years away.
Well, they offered Amoroso $15,000 a month exactly. to shut up and go away.
Exactly. So you have to wonder, how many people are they doing that for? How many people are getting these cush jobs where they're not actually doing anything, but they're basically being handed $180,000 a year? And do Republican donors know about that? Like, if they're going to blow all their cash on basically keeping Trump's people quiet, I got no problem with that. That means it's not going to GOTB.
And it's good for the economy because they'll eventually spend that money and it won't go to political ads and all that. Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I'm not against it. I hope they waste their money in much more creative ways.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Maybe they can privatize the parade and give Donnie his parade. Maybe they can have an old tank go down the road or something.
At the very least, send Scott Pruitt a couple of pairs of tactical pants.
You're not going to send him an ostrich jacket and some satin pants?
Nah, that's for Paul Manafort.
So let's talk about
jumpsuit made of ostrich skin or something.
No, I'm in favor of that. I think he should have to wear that in prison.
Right?
The ostrich jacket, the satin pants. I think he'd be very popular.
Oh my God, I bet he would be.
So let's talk about the whatever that was today. Do you think this should be enough to be concerned about, that the jury's asking about reasonable doubt, that they're asking about some very, very technical questions that, when I thought about it, I'm like, wow, I would have never thought about that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, no, I definitely am worried about it. I think that, watching the trial the way that it went, the one thing that shocked me was that the defense called no witnesses. They didn't put up any defense at all. And that led me to believe, I wonder if they did that for a reason, because if they put up some kind of defense, if they said anything, if they made any kind of comment, then that could open them up to some kind of awkward situation. If they say nothing, and Paul Manafort never takes the stand, he never has to lie to anybody or talk about it to anybody, then Trump's going to pardon them.
Yeah, well, according to Renato Mariotti, the guy who ran for attorney general in Illinois, who we've had on the program a number of times, it's fairly common in white-collar crimes like this for the defense to put up nothing, for them just to punch holes in the prosecution case and say, there's just no proof here. So according to him, this is fairly common. I didn't know it either. It's one of those things where I go, I'd want to put up a vigorous defense. But, once you get up on the stand, you don't just get to tell your side of it. You get to get tortured and crucified and cross-examined.
Yeah. And I get why you wouldn't want to put the defendant up, but at least somebody who could speak for you, the guy who sold you your $1 million carpets or something. The character witness.
Yeah. Well,
he was very nice to me when he bought these expensive carpets.
And his check didn't bounce. Granted, it was, it was from Cyprus, but it didn't bounce.
It was a wire transfer from Cyprus with some Russian guy's name on it. But hey, I still got my money from my $1 million rug.
Yeah, Dimitri came. And finally, I want to talk about what's going on down in Florida. Again, Florida seems to be the home of all the bad election stuff. You go back to 2000 with the voting while black kicked a bunch of people off the voting rolls, and they were right there with the caging in 2004. So they've been kind of at the forefront, and now you've got Senator Nelson who's saying, hey, the Russians have hacked our elections. This is a weird spot for him to be in, because he's got to be saying, in my view, he's got to be letting some of what he's hearing in classified meetings out, but not able to say what it is. So I got to think it's going to backfire on him. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's the thing that I'm the most worried about, is that it's put him in such an awkward position where Governor Scott is now saying, well, either you're just making this up or you're breaching, classified information. You're publicizing classified information. They had a U.S. attorney, a former U.S. attorney that was on Maddow last night that said, no, not exactly. Like, what he's saying is pretty much all you could say. Like, there's a concern. And Nelson has talked about, I can't be specific, I can't give you any more information, but I know that once he said something about it publicly, immediately, I guess, the Secretary of State called Homeland Security and the FBI about it. The problem with calling Homeland Security and the FBI is that the Secretary of State of Florida was told, we'll get back to you. So it's like, when are you going to get back to us? Before or after the election? Are you going to help with anything? Because I'm pretty sure the entire state of Florida, you know, like Miami County can't fight the Russian hackers by themselves.
Right. But here's the thing. Why would the Secretary of State of Florida care? Her team's going to win.
Yeah, you would think, but I mean, imagine that indictment. Imagine that, you know, somebody opening some kind of grand jury investigation into the fact that she didn't do anything to prevent the hacking of the 2018 election in the state of Florida. I mean, already there's been a video of a kid who is 11 years old who was able to hack into a voting machine in like less than an hour.
No, it was like 10 minutes. It was like, I think it was 11 minutes or something
really?
Like that.
Really? Oh my God.
I mean, it was really quick. I mean, it was just into their website. She wasn't able to change any votes or anything, but you know, she could get the information that was on their site really quickly.
And that was the thing that they were talking about with the hackers. If you look through the indictment from Mueller about the 12 hackers that were indicted, there's a lot of forensic detail in that that talks about how they did not change any vote totals, but they could have. They got to a point where they could change that information. And I know that whenever they had the, I think we were talking about it maybe last week or the week before when they were talking about the Kansas election, somebody had accidentally transferred a number in one of the counties, and it was a fluke that the county clerk noticed it on the state page and then flagged it like, no, you copied these numbers down wrong. I mean, the fact that some dyslexic person could switch two numbers and that's an election for somebody.
Yep.
So I can see somebody just hacking into Chris Kobach's computer because, oops, he stuck a thumb drive in or something that he got from some gun convention from Maria Butina, and all of a sudden the state of Kansas has been hacked by, you know, the Russians.
Yeah, which again, I've said this 1,000 times and I'll say it again. If we're stuck on that, we have to have these electronic machines and that we can't possibly wait a day or two for the final vote and we need the immediate tally, we should have the little machines and they should spit out a piece of paper and we should verify that, yep, this is it. It should go into a box and that's your vote. That's what gets counted. But, you know, for you know, tabulation and, you know, at 9 o'clock when the polls close, we can immediately tell you who won upon verification of every little piece of paper.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always something that you can do an audit of, that you have some giant group of papers that you can go back through and check and count by hand. I mean, I told you I will not vote on an electronic voting machine. I always will do an actual paper ballot that I fill in the bubble. Just because I don't trust it.
Yeah,
I used to work for a Secretary of State, so
Here in Pennsylvania, in order for me to do that, I have to sign a verified piece of paper on why I can't show up to the polls. Like I'm going to be out of town, and I better be out of town, or because they'll probably come get me anyway. But you have to have a reason. You can't just go, you know what? I don't trust the system. Which I wish you could. Yeah. I wish you could do that, and you could just you have your ballots in whenever. I wish you could do that. Here in Pennsylvania, maybe someday, but not today. Finally, the last bit from Florida. Have you seen the woman with the fake diploma?
I forgot about that. God, that was like 2 days ago.
What the heck was that?
You know, a lot of people pad their resumes.
Yeah, there's padding your resume. There's writing that down on a piece, but there's creating your own diploma.
It's like, dude. People look this stuff up. Like, you can find out whether or not somebody graduated from college. They just call the bursar's office and ask. And reporters do that stuff. Like, we've actually done that with people that we're investigating. So it's not absurd. Like, if you lie, you will get caught. First rule of politics, do not lie. You will get caught. It'll either be me or somebody else who catches you. And then we will mock you.
And as you should be mocked.
Yeah, idiot.
Pretty simple. Sarah, always fun, always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Thanks so much. Our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story. Check out her work over at Raw Story. Good stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.